Hello and welcome to the Hodgkiss & Wiley Q4 2021 High Yield Market Update. My name is John Hosse, and I am joined today by Ray Kennedy, Portfolio Manager on the High Yield Strategy. Today, we'll be providing an update on performance during the fourth quarter, and we'll highlight reasons for continued optimism in the high yield market more generally in 2022. Before we begin, a few disclosures. This podcast is for general information only and should not be relied on for investment advice or recommendation of any particular security, strategy, or investment product. The portfolio manager's views and opinions expressed in this podcast are as of January 18, 2022. Such views are subject to change and may differ from others in the firm or the firm as a whole. The portfolio manager's comments include some estimated and/or forecasted views, which are believed to be based on reasonable assumptions within the bounds of current and historical information. However, there is no guarantee that any estimates, forecasts, or views will be realized. In the event of new information or changed circumstances, Hodgkiss & Wiley reserves the right to change its investment perspective and outlook. So, Ray, our high yield strategy slightly outperformed the ICE BofA High Yield Index during the quarter and certainly outperformed more broadly on the full year on both a gross and net of fee basis. Can you talk about some of the key performance drivers during the quarter and full year?
Sure, and thank you for the time today. In terms of quarter and year, they kind of paralleled in terms of performance. Really, the key, of course, was credit selection. And I would say that the real driver, obviously, in that area was energy. Some of that was legacy, but a lot of it was just proactive ideas that we came up with in the last 2 years, especially when we had the sell-off in spring of 2020. But the industrial sector was also a strong contributor. That tends to be a generic class that includes everything from home builders to chemicals. Our building products exposure, which we are overweight the index, was a strong contributor and a diversified contributor, which I'm glad to say. But so really it falls into those three categories, home building, energy, industrial, and home builders being a subsector of industrial. But our smaller credits outperformed too. And when you look overall, the issuers that are less than a billion in size or strong outperformers, as well as those that are kind of in the 500 million size. Just to reiterate, our sweet spot is a 500 million size issuer, single B industrial credit. That's kind of our bread and butter that we're always looking for out there to build the portfolio. One of the reasons that the larger credits underperformed in the index and we outperformed was because they tend to be more treasury sensitive. They tend to be double B, longer duration names. And as the treasury market started a bit of its sell-off, that those credits especially dragged, and those we tend to be underweight. Just kind of the last thing I would point out on performance, the triple Cs and the single Bs had strong performers. We're not a large triple C investor, but those that we did have performed well. But again, our bread and butter, single B, names did extremely well, pointing out, as we said earlier, that the double Bs tended to have a less strong year. In terms of positioning changes that we talk about in the portfolio going forward, it's really going to kind of stay the course. We've built this strategy focused on this SMID approach. It's done well over time. Obviously, there are years when it will struggle, especially as you see double Bs rally. I think that's not going to be a problem this year. So it's really staying the course. We have added more names to build a little bit more diversity to dampen any volatility in the market. But as we're going to talk about, I know a little bit later, you know, when we talk about the quality of the high yield market, we're kind of at the position you want to be to take advantage of that.
Well, that's a good transition, Ray. I know your team recently penned a new piece that highlights the top 10 reasons for investing in high yield. Can you walk through some of the key points highlighted in this piece, which can be found on the Hodgkiss & Wiley website?
Absolutely. First of all, big picture, the high yield market has been improving for the last really 10 years, really since the great financial crisis. It's, you know, obviously a trillion plus market, approaching really almost 2 trillion. 1.5 is kind of the number that we tend to talk about. When you include the leveraged loan market, it's almost approaching 3 trillion. But more importantly, it just continues to improve in quality. And why is that? The history of the high yield market has been largely driven by LBOs, and LBOs have become a smaller and smaller part of the high yield market. You're seeing more spinoffs from companies, and they tend to be kind of higher quality. And we've kind of gone through the cleansing that occurred during the great financial crisis. So overall, the high yield market just continues to improve. And so that bodes well for defaults. But when we get into specifics, you know, balance sheets just continue to improve. The cash positions are just at levels that are unheard of. You know, when I started this business, if companies had cash, it was a positive thing. Now the only question is, how much cash do they hold? And it's not unusual for them to have 1 or 2 years of just operating cash flow, just sitting on the balance sheet. This will point to then lower default rates going forward, because at the end of the day, defaults are just driven by companies running out of cash. And, you know, we continue to see that coming down really probably even as close as 1%, which is unheard of, given that the historical average is closer to 3 to 4%, which then now raises the question, where are we in the cycle? I don't think anyone would build the case that we're at the end of a credit cycle. We're clearly at probably the midpoint. And as so long as the economy continues to hold with positive growth, and by the way, positive inflation, which does help high yield issuers so long as it's kept at in control, that all points to a kind of a mid-cycle credit market. And that's, again, very favorable. We hate to use terms like Goldilocks. We hate to use terms like things are as good as it gets, but things are very well positioned in the high yield market from a fundamental standpoint. The one thing that we obviously do talk a lot about is inflation. And, you know, my one comment about inflation is that high yield tends to do okay with some inflation. And if you look at it historically, you're borrowing at one set of dollars. And so to the extent you can inflate some of that away through higher prices on your goods and services, it will help you delever just naturally. But of course, being a high-yield company, you don't have too many levers to pull. So you have to be careful about things like wages and material costs, where you tend to not be in a position to necessarily absorb that as well as maybe a larger company. So we're all keeping an eye on that. But so long as the inflation rate kind of keeps in that typical, you know, kind of 2 to 4%, which I think most people think that's where it's going to be in the next 2 years or so, high yield should do well.
You talked about balance sheet strength and liquidity and overall cash positions. It seems as though companies are operating much more conservatively than maybe they have in the past. What is the majority of debt issuance in the high yield space being used for?
Good point. And most of the issuance that we're seeing is still refinancing. We did see a little bit of a tick up in dividends last year. We're also seeing more spinoffs. I think the bankers are getting more creative. Companies in this valuation environment are seeing more opportunities to separate their business, to streamline them. And when they do that, they tend to borrow debt as part of a repositioning of the capital structure between the two entities that are separated. So that's kind of a new area that we're watching in high yield in terms of issuance. But LBOs continue to be a very small part. We're kind of scratching our head on that, given the amount of funding that's available in the private equity market. And unless that changes and becomes kind of a flag, I continue to see the new issue market largely being driven by refinancing. You know, one thing that everyone should remember is that the high yield market, as a general rule, will refinance about 25% of the issuance or the issues outstanding in any given year. And that kind of makes sense of a duration of 4, where we stand today. That means you're probably calling about a quarter of your bonds. And bonds get called for a variety of reasons, obviously economic, but they also get called for things such as just the structural characteristic of the bond. Maybe it's secured. And so we've actually had a tremendous number of bonds get called last year. And that bodes well for investors because it lets you basically reinvest in the current rate environment in the market, which again creates opportunities for investors to minimize the impact of interest rates.
Some of the fallen angels that you picked up 12 to 18 months ago have performed well. That's obviously, again, an area that we'll take advantage of when the opportunity comes our way. There are far fewer of those opportunities at this point, correct?
That's correct. You know, a lot of the things that we bought, some of the consumer products names, some of the energy names, which are really kind of the two, and obviously the cruise lines. The consumer products names, we've kind of had to harvest. It's unfortunate. They're great names, but they're not competitive. to the investment set that we have in high yield. Some of the energy names we still have, and we continue to hold those with the appreciation, especially in the high rate environment. The opportunity set, Fallen Angels, really kind of still is in two areas, in the airlines and the cruise lines. And that's going to be a longer recovery, as we've all witnessed here in the last couple of weeks with Omicron. And so those will be ideas that can still generate positive returns from that Fallen Angels set. But in terms of new ideas, if you just look around in the investment grade market and you think, what can come my way? And the answer is really nothing at this point. It would have to be self-inflicted, meaning a management team decided to go to high yield because they did some sort of releveraging event. So, you know, as we've said in the past, this tends to be an area where we increase the portfolio significantly and then kind of harvest it over time. And we did exactly that in 2020 when we increased that to a substantial part of the portfolio. And now it's starting to decrease again.
Now, you've sort of discussed a little bit of this in terms of your outlook, fundamentals, technicals, and valuation indicators. Can you talk about any changes that you've had recently or may see in the first half of 2022?
Fundamentally, I don't see any change. We're going to continue to kind of rate that as a kind of a four-ish type out of a five, scale of five. Just everything seems to be just going super well. You ask yourself, what does it take to get a five? And I guess that's a good question. I'm not sure what we would give a five, except that it would literally have to be just no debt and just tons of cash and literally no defaults. But that's going to be continued. I don't see any change in that. Technicals, that's where we could see a little bit of bumpiness this year. We kind of put that neutral. But I think if we see a significant change in flows in either direction, either in or out, that could shift that. High yield is to me, is still very competitive from an opportunity set for investors. And so I don't see outflows. If anything, if we see any sell-off in the high yield market, I think we'd see a significant number of people come into it. Valuations, you know, I feel like we've just continued to talk about the idea that spreads are still very wide to compensate you for the risk. It's just all about the absolute levels. And those of us who have been doing this a long time, we still do struggle with 5%, but 5% is a lot better than, you know, a CD at 50 basis points. So I think you're going to continue to see this as a relatively attractive asset class.
Well, it definitely does come down to the carry trade, if you will, and high yield certainly seems a lot better position than investment grade and certainly better position than treasuries at this point.
That's correct. So I was doing something interesting this past weekend, helping a parent out to try to figure out income ideas for them. So I started looking at the opportunity side out there, and I realized it has changed substantially over the last few years because I just haven't had to do this for a parent that's looking at income. You know, a two-year CD is 60 basis points. A muni fund with a four-year duration is 50 basis points. The IG index, which is the basically the equivalent of the Lehman Ag, is 2.6% yield to worst with an eight-year duration. The dividend yield on the SPY is approaching 1%. And here's good old high yield at 5% yield to worst and, you know, a less than four-year duration. And if you generate some alpha from calls and just that alone without even any sort of assumptions on default, you're still going to be very, very competitive. So I see this still as a very attractive asset class, especially with the fundamentals out there being so strong, defaults remaining low. We have room to run here for a while.
Do you see pensions picking up additional carry through the high yield trade?
They're going to have to, because I think one of the things we've all observed here is that there's been a significant number of retirements. As retirements occur, you need cash to pay out, which means pension funds need to find alternatives to generate income. And the natural source is basically income products like high yield. You know, that a lot of them have invested from equities to private equity that doesn't provide any liquidity for them. They've gone into private credit, which again, very little liquidity, and high yield tends to be the sweet spot for them. I look at this kind of from a historical lens. You know, I've been in this business for over 30 years. And one of the things it's very interesting to watch is just how household or how the high yield asset class has become just such a standard asset class for household, retail investors, obviously, that's incorporated in that. And of course, you know, pension plans, state plans, et cetera. You know, when I started this business, you were still trying to pitch the idea of investing in high yield. Now the only question is what percentage of their allocations are allocated to the asset class. So I don't see that as changing. I think as we get an aging population that retires, we're going to see more demand for high yield.
I agree. I don't know where else people are supposed to go for income these days. So high yield seems to be the place to be. Well, Ray, I want to thank you. You've been a great guest and I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
And I want to thank our audience for your interest in the Hotchkiss & Wiley High Yield Strategy. Again, the newsletter, the top 10 reasons for high yield, can be found under the news and insight section at hwcm.com. And if you have any other questions, please feel free to call us at 888-596-4926. Thank you.